Right. Welcome to session 3.1. The first talk this morning is by Joshi Nakayama and Yoshi Ono. That is the title. I can read it out loud, but you can all see it. Let's get started.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for coming in the early part of the morning. I'm Joshi Nakayama, and Yoshi Ono is not could not be here, so I'm sort of presenting on our behalf. Okay. The goal of our talk is to re-examine the link between linguist grammar on one hand and speaker's understanding on the other. And by linguist grammar, what I have in mind is things like descriptive framework or theoretical understanding of grammatical organization, and speaker's understanding. What I mean is like how speaker use language in actual real life, and also speaker's intuition about how language works. So in short, we would like to think about the following question. Is theory directly applicable to teaching and revitalization? And of course, the question is rather big, and we would like to think about this sort of big question in relation to a concrete issue we experience in our work. That is the problem of determining the base form of a verb. And more specifically, like what form is used as a representative form when lexeme can take multiple forms. So for example, like verbs can take multiple inflected forms. So when we have that, which form we would use as a representative form. And our talk is based on our experience in our work with Miyako, a Ryukyuan language spoken in Okinawa. And first, let me say a few words about language. Miyako language, more specifically, Ikema dialect is the dialect we are working on. Is part of Ryukyuan languages spoken in Okinawa, and this Ryukyuan, so with, together with Japanese, form a Japonic group. And Miyako is spoken in the southern Ryukyus in Okinawa, Japan, and I'll show you the map later. And it is an endangered language with 2,000 to 3,000 fluent speakers. It's still active use in generations above of 60 to 65 years old, but daily lives are dominated by Japanese. That's a sort of official language in that part of Japan, too, especially for younger generations. So they are, you know, mostly exposed to Japanese in their daily lives. And no children are growing up speaking the language, and no writing tradition. So here's a map. That's southern part of Japan, between sort of, so Ryukyu Archipelago is located between Kyushu of Japan and Taiwan, so there. And within this area, linguistically, the Ryukyus are separated into two major groups, a northern group and southern group, and Miyako is part of the southern group. Okay, and this is sort of island of Miyako. The biggest one is the main Miyako island, and around that main island, there are a couple of smaller islands, and the Ikema dialect we work on, actually spoken in three different places, but we work on that, the dialect spoken in Ikema Island, which is located north of the main island of Miyako. Okay, and a few words about the kind of work we are doing in Ikema Miyako. We have been working with speakers between like mid-50s to early or mid-90s. And our activities include things like recording various spoken discourse that includes like narratives, interviews, conversations, and procedural texts. and also collecting vocabulary items and analyzing grammatical patterns and structure on the basis of natural discourse data. In terms of method, our main focus is on sort of recording and analysis of natural discourse. We try to sort of work mainly from the natural discourse to get the sort of good sense of how language works in the actual setting. And of course we use elicitation as a supplementary sort of a method during like transcription and translation session, but we try to focus our attention to what's going on in natural discourse. Okay, about ikema verbs. Ikema verbs inflect. So here is a, this is a subset of or paradigm actually, to give you an idea how things look. And so there is, you can't get just stems. Everything has to be sort of inflected. And the question is, you know, which one you should use as a base form when you like you make dictionaries and so on. Let me sort of think a little bit about what we tend to mean by like a base form. So base form is supposed to be a natural sort of a natural representative for form for a lexeme. So that's something that, you know, that we typically sort of think of naturally. And it's important for theory and description. That means like analysis and description are organized around these forms. So when you collect data, like verbs, you ask for, you know, a verb-y sort of concept by using that base form, or in the case of word formation, that serves as a base for all other derived forms. And when you give organized entries in dictionary, that's the form you use as a sort of a citation form or main form. And at the same time, it's the base form is equally appropriate and important for teaching and learning. That's sort of our typical assumption, because they are, these basic forms are psychologically real in speakers and obvious to all speakers. Okay, I'm not saying that's the way it is, but that's the sort of typical assumption we hold. Now, how base forms are typically determined? Usually like morphologically simple ones, so not derived one, we use that as a sort of base form so that we can sort of lay out all the derivational pattern around that form. And syntactically neutral ones, so present tense, things that are in like affirmative, and also independent, the form that is used in the as a predicate of independent sentence. So based on those, now if we were to pick a base form for ikema verb, this one, like a non-past form, would stand out as a sort of basic form or base form because it's morphologically simplest, it's like a smallest, and it is used as affirmative sentences and also non-past, so it's not sort of a, sort of syntactically sort of a neutral, and it is used as a predicate of a sort of independent sentence. Okay, now our experience, so that was sort of a expectation, but when referring to a verb, when as we were working with speakers, when referring to a verb in elicitation sessions or like sometimes speakers come up with like personal word lists, people who get interested in like words in their dialect, that's what they call the of their language, but you know, like especially old folks want to build up some sort of gather some words in ikema and sort of make up like their own word list, And the form we find in these setting, not non-past form, but the medial form is most commonly used among native speakers. So we are sort of puzzled by that. But at the same time, the interesting thing is researchers and also trained speakers, namely sort of speakers who get used to like a linguistic work after working so hard with linguists and sort of get used to like structural elicitation and things, use non-past form, so as expected in a way. So dictionary and word lists by linguists and the more academically inclined speakers, and I list the examples there, Hilaima 1983 and Nevsky 2005, he's a linguist, and Nakama 92 to 2001, and that's is a series of like word lists published. In these work, we see non-past form as a sort of a citation form or base form. Okay, and Nakama's one is a kind of interesting one because it has non-past form and also medium form sort of mixed in an interesting way. So that's why I put that in parentheses. Okay, now from that, we can see that linguistic notion of base form is not necessarily a natural part of a native speaker's intuition, especially with regard to verbs. And appropriate representative forms can be different for different people. So, quick sort of review. For ordinary speakers, the medial form was the sort of form of choice. And possible factor affecting the choice seems to be a frequency of use, because by far, when we examine the natural discourse data, the medial form is by far the most frequently used verb form. And academically inclined people tend to use a non-past form, as I said. And possible factors, affecting the choice here seems to be practice in the majority language, because Japanese grammar is organized around that non-past form. And also, this is sort of a related factor, but academic tradition or theoretical framework that prefers to see a non-past form as a base form, because it's sort of convenient and theoretically sort of economical to set that as a base form. Then we can sort of have better sort of a layout of derived forms. So implications of those. Choice of one representative form over the other is not a matter of correct or incorrect. And so choice, in a way, is arbitrarily to a degree. And what I mean by arbitrary is there is no single universally valid or natural choice. So choice always depends on the context, and there isn't a way to sort of determine the only right way to sort of choose a base form, it seems. And appropriate representative forms can be different depending on the goal and audience. So for native Ikema speakers, the medial form rather than the non-past form may make better sense as a representative form. And because the appropriate base form can be different for different people, there is a potential danger of choosing a form that does not help or even hinder learning, because we pick the base form based on like a linguist sort of idea about how base form should be selected, but speaker may operate in different sort of a way when they think of what is base and what is the sort of representative form. So there is a potential danger for mismatch. And when there is a mismatch, the representative form we picked based on our criteria may appear misleading or confusing for speakers. So organization of materials in language documentation and revitalization should be informed not by what speakers do as much as, or if not more than, by what linguists do, or what we would like to see. Okay, well, that's it, thank you. I was so worried that I had too many slides and I cut down and then now I got really short. Okay, thank you.
Lots of time for questions.
This is obviously a problem for a paper-based dictionary that you want to have a citation form.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, the possibilities now offered by new ways of doing this online or in apps. My colleague who works on polysynthetic languages, we're discussing the possibility of generating every possible inflected form and using that as part of a finalist to point back to a head word. So the head word becomes a sort of an artifact that's essentially arbitrary, as you say, but all of this would allow you then to capture speakers' intuitions, they can look for any inflected form and go back to the head word. So I don't know, have you explored anything like that?
Yeah, actually that's the sort of answer we had in mind. And I have been working with another language, polysynthetic language, and there the situation is much worse. And you really can't have actual word as a head word, because all word has contain so many morphemes. And it doesn't really make sense to pick like a morpheme as an entry, because that is not psychologically real to speaker. So yeah, we gotta pick that, use the sort of a hyperlinked sort of a online kind of dictionary, I think. And that would be the way to go. Then this sort of point has become sort of moot, yeah, in a way. Yeah.
I think you made a very good point. I've been doing EKML for like 8 or 9 years. And there are about 10 to 12 conjugation patterns for verbs. And in order to decide which conjugation pattern a particular verb belongs to, you have to look at like 3 or 4 conjugations, right? So you can list all those conjugations. And as he was saying, the head word is a different word. I've been choosing, the non-pass form as the head word, which is an arbitrary decision. We can also use collisional forms, which is the most used citation that is for Kema speakers, not for Nishara speakers, right? Same language spoken. Okay. So that's what we've been doing in the dictionary selection that I've been compiling for Ikema and Nishara, Ikema language, Ikema dialect, together with Shoichi Iwasaki.
For presentation, we have, not presentation, but for dictionary, kind of dictionary, we have solution by sort of that using the multimedia kind of dictionary would be a solution, but there this sort of problem still remains when it comes to like how to present form when you tell someone like a verb, what form should you use, is still a kind of thorny issue. You can't sort of keep switching back different forms when you refer to here is a form for go or run or something like that. You have to pick in certain conditions. And I guess our point is, we tend to assume the basic, I mean, the linguistic kind of base form is the way to go, but that may not be the case always. So we have to sort of pay attention to what kind of forms speaker sort of use internally to when they think about like actions or verbs, and then use that, adopt that sort of a representative form as a form we use to sort of present or communicate like verbs with speakers, I think. Yeah.
The base form may never appear independently,
right,
depending on the language.
Yeah.
For instance, in Austronesian language, the base form never appears as a free form. So that may have to do with your choosing the base form. For instance, the variable forms may one of the vowel or more than one vowel may be deleted depending on the affixation. But you take an ideal base form with all the vowel, with all consonant and all the vowel. Now I'm going to show you what I mean. The second question I would like to raise is Nevsky, as I understand it, is a Russian who studied this the language in 1930s or so, and he died very early, but the publication is 2005.
Right.
That's a posthumous.
Yeah, someone came along and sort of put together a word list based on his material, because he didn't really, you know, publish the dictionary as it in that form. So it was sort of posthumously sort of put together by other person. Yeah. And what was the first question? I guess I missed
that. What I meant to say is that this one may not appear in any free form.
Right. Yeah. Of course, I mean, unlike in English, maybe infinitive form can be used as a sort of a base form from which you can add things. But in Ikema or Japanese or these languages, you gotta have some like inflectional sort of suffix in order for the word to be actually usable. So of course, linguists would pick like a morpheme or a stem or root to be the perfect entry, because we are sort of obsessed about economy, or we want to identify the smallest, you know, like possible unit. But speaker doesn't operate that way usually, because the only thing they hear is a sort of something in word form, and they tend to build image of word based on what they hear, instead of, you know, the sort of abstract form we can sort of analyze. So your point is well taken, yes. And how should I answer this question? I don't have any disagreement about, you know, picking or having difficulty if we focus on like a really sort of a morpheme level thing, which is not realizing actual language use. Yeah. Yes.
So you talked about your arguments for using the non-past form as a basic entry, right? Being the, I guess, morphologically most, the simplest form, right?
Yeah.
So, and then you also mentioned that native speakers tend to use the medial form. Now, what's their motivation for choosing that form? Do you have any idea about that?
So I mentioned, yeah, that's frequency. It looks like, I mean, frequency. So morphologically, it's sort of derived. It has sort of medial suffix. So it is derived and longer, and it is not self-standing in a way, because it's used in a dependent, so-called dependent clauses. It's in a clause-changing situation, you would use that form. So linguists probably would not pick that as a base form, because it's in so many ways, it's not, it doesn't sound like a base. But speakers seems to react to sort of a frequency, because as I said, in text, natural discourse, especially in narratives, you see my media form is almost all the form you see. And every once in a while you see non-past form, maybe between scenes, when there is a scene reset, you see the media, the non-past form to sort of close the chain. But that happens quite infrequently.
All right, so the medial form is like the converb form. It's not like medial form,
yeah,
or something, right?
Right. Yeah, it's sort
right.
of converb-like.
All right. Then.
If you have time, could you show us one more time the chart of the verb?
Yeah.
Contrast.
Let me care. Let's see.
I wonder if frequency is the only factor. The reason that I wonder this is that in Yurok, in Northern California, there's a similar mismatch where linguistically trained people will now use the first person singular main clause inflected form, but traditionally linguistically uninformed people would cite the subordinate clause, actually the third person singular mm-hmm. subordinate clause form, which is incredibly rare. So frequency could not possibly be responsible,
right.
But that subordinate clause form is also something that would be used as the equivalent of a nominalization. So it could be syntactically the equivalent of
right.
running or something like that. And I wonder if you think that there could be anything other than frequency responsible.
Yeah,
for the
yeah. yeah. To be honest, we are not quite sure if you know frequency is doing it, but. Our observation was the medial form is by far the most frequent form, but there is no really, I don't know, we couldn't come up with a good way to prove that. Because you can't really sort of run, I guess you could if you're a psycholinguist, but I'm not no psycholinguist, so I couldn't sort of come up with the sort of experiment or any other way to sort of prove that point. If you have any idea, I'm really sort of grateful. But Karen.
When you said psycholinguistic, it was just making me think of some of the psycholinguistic research, which is really focusing on individuals and showing that different learners
right.
adopt different strategies. So it could be that frequency would be a strategy adopted by some learners,
mm-hmm.
and other learners might focus on something else, not frequency,
sure.
but something else. So I think what you said about you divided it between the kind of ones that were more linguistically trained and others, but I wouldn't be surprised if that others group actually
mm-hmm.
is much more variable as well. And then the psycholinguistic work, if it could be done, would be really interesting
right.
because it would help to see what are the different kinds of things that different individuals are picking out, and probably ultimately lead to better teaching materials, because it would kind of give different entry points into things.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So in a way, yeah, thank you. It's sort of, it's probably has to do with learning style. Too. I mean, because the way you recognize these representative form depend on people, and if the teaching style fits that learning style, then that would, you know, make the learning more sort of effective. And I guess the tricky part is, yeah, I mean, there is individual differences. So I don't know if there is a way to come up with a sort of one single best way to sort of do this kind of thing. I mean, determine like base form for that. But our point was we have to keep in mind that base form, the idea of base form, is not sort of obvious to or shared or universally shared by everyone, I guess.
Okay, I think we have to stop.
Okay.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.